GM, GM, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that's in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here with Capital K, and we are here to help you harness the power of the flywheel. Let's get some kerosene in that flywheel to get this one going, because we have on Joey from Dyad, Joey Roth, the founder of Dyad. I've known Joey. I've been messaging him for the past few years. It's interesting that he came into DeFi post-DeFi summer, and so his perspective is like much different, but I think it's a way that plays to his advantage, because it's not like he like is using things from like the past and anything. He's like can like come in from like a completely different framework. I got Joey on because I feel like I saw like an inflection point on the timeline with like different novel threads I've seen. And I had like a few people message me saying like, yo, like you should like check this out. And honestly, like this is like really important to like go down in the comments and like let me know who you want to see, or just like message me on Twitter or Telegram, like who you want to see. Because I do listen and like I just try to pay attention. And like when I looked into it more, I ended up like, full disclosure, getting like a small bag of kerosene just because I'm like, oh, this is like pretty cool. Like there's like something here. So putting that out there. I just like, I love seeing actual DeFi stablecoin experimentation, especially like in a time where like everyone's like kind of jaded by forks or like this and that. Like this is like, and also this is on mainnet. This is on ETH mainnet. We didn't say that in the show, but this is like literally on Ethereum mainnet. Okay. So like, and especially with like mainnet gas being as low as it is, like, hey, this is like quite the attractive option to like go play around with stablecoins. Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
Oh man, I just gotta say, pay attention to how he innovated, not just on the stablecoin design, but also on how the product structure innovation as well too. I think that is where the magic is.
Yeah, for sure. Should the viewers and listeners at home get out a pen and notepad for this one?
Yeah, this one's kind of tough. This one's a little tough. So definitely bring out that pen and notepad.
Yeah, but before you do, if you're new to the channel, please go ahead and subscribe right now. Hit that bell button. Go to the comments. Let us know what you think. Give us a like. Follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And let's get the flywheel spinning. Back to another episode of Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here as always with Capital K. And this time around, we come back home to stablecoins. We have on Joey Roth, the founder of Dyad, who has been building through the bear I remember you were in my DMs in 2021, 2022, always giving me updates. I'm like, what's this Dyad thing? And I thought like, oh, it's just like another stablecoin here and that, but I always kept my how I operate is like I always keep tabs on things. And then when I notice something reached an inflection point, that's when I go and jump on. And I feel like Dyad has reached this inflection point. Like you guys have been live, you have your V2, and I've had like both, I've seen a few threads and I've gotten a few messages. I'm like, okay, now's the time for Dyad. So Joey, kudos for building in the bear. And thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for having me. And you're absolutely right. It has been a journey to get to this point, especially in like DeFi timelines, crypto timelines. This has been like seriously long term, two plus years. I think that, you know, the cliche is absolutely true. When you build in the bear, there's just way fewer tourists. There's way more focus on like cool mechanisms and innovation, less concern about price, because price is shit across the board, so you can just ignore it and just get down to actually making cool shit. So that's I think that was a good place to start, and I'm actually happy that was the beginning. Now, I mean, I don't even know, and I'm not the one to speak to what type of market we're in right now. I don't think it's a bear anymore, it's some other kind of animal, but it's a good time to be seeing some traction with the stuff that we've been building, for sure.
Oh, I think Dave just cut out.
Uh-oh.
What? Sorry, Joey. Bear with us here. Oh, here it is.
I'm back. Sorry. We had a technical difficulty, but we're so back. Okay. I was going to say, you have to be a real masochist to build, not only building a bear, but building DeFi in a bear, because it has not been fun. It has been painful. It is not for like the lighthearted at all. And especially like everything we've seen, it makes a lot of people question their faith. It makes a lot of people question, why am I here? Like, what's the point of this? Blah, blah, blah. So like, I'm curious, I was going to ask you what's your background? How'd you get into crypto? But like, what motivated you to keep building in the bear when it felt like all hope was lost?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's just the way I'm built, where I see a suboptimal
built different
system. Yeah. Post up that X-ray with the pit bulls overlaid, right? I mean, I'm not a masochist exactly, but I will endure and almost ignore like pain if there's something that's really compelling that I just need to build and I can't stop thinking about. So that's, I mean, to build in hardware is painful through like from start to finish. It's just a difficult thing to do. So aspects of DeFi are more painful. Aspects are way less painful, but I think that was my baseline. And so I've never done like Web2, like kind of launch a beta and then deploy updates once like you have some user feedback kind of stuff. That is an aspect of what we do, but there is an immutable core that, similar to hardware, you have to know this is good to go because you cannot change it later. And that's very normal to me. So I think that level of like, if you mess this up, bad things will happen, is definitely from that hardware way of building things. But again, I think that like my obsession with solving the stablecoin product and solving the stablecoin sort of core mechanism became so overwhelming and just so all I could really think about was this mechanism design that, when you're in sort of a flow state like that, the painfulness of like, nobody cares about this, people are doing meme coins, whatever, it's very easy to tune all of that out. Like almost you can't not tune it out, because all of your cycles are just, how do I optimize this? How do I get people to work on this? Show them the vision, the people who are at the level needed to execute. And that's really all I had time to think about. So that's, I didn't know any different. So my first entry into crypto was like 2021. And yeah, that was during the last bull, but I wasn't really building then. I've only built DeFi in that kind of a market. So I, again, didn't have a like happier days point of comparison.
And what did you do in hardware before, out of curiosity?
Yeah, so I focused on consumer hardware of like, normally stuff that would go on like your desk or your kitchen counter. And I know that sounds oddly specific, but that is like a category. So I would do mainly like audio and coffee devices is where I really started to go in. And then the last product I did before dedicating my time entirely to Dyad was this coffee device called Ozma, which actually used an audio transducer to extract coffee without using heat, with using basically acoustic cavitation instead of heat, so that you could get like a very quick cold brew without the sort of staleness that you get with a normal like immersion or toddy style cold brew, because you have to let it sit for like 18 hours.
So, and does it still have that flavor? And still maintains like the coffee flavor?
Completely, yeah.
I feel like interesting.
So the trick with cold brew and like versus espresso, when you make an espresso, you're extracting it really, really fast, but you do it under a high heat. So the heat sensitive flavor and aroma compounds are destroyed in that process. So an espresso is like a filtered range of that total flavor and aroma you can get from the coffee bean. Cold brew, similar story, but different set of compounds. So cold brew keeps those heat sensitive compounds, but you lose the time sensitive compounds, the ones that are so volatile. And that's why an espresso, when you pull it like a minute later, 5 minutes later, if you let it sit, it's going to have a different aroma. And like when you're actually pulling the shot, you can perceive things that just go away immediately. So our that design, Ozma, the acoustic cavitation, was how do we capture both of those, right? The time sensitive, the heat sensitive. So yeah, wow. if you think the espresso trilemma, the coffee trilemma. That was the last thing I did before focusing entirely on DeFi.
And then how'd you get hooked on stablecoins? So hooked on coffee before, coffee's out, new best friend, stablecoins. Like how'd you get started building? Like what made you like so obsessed with new mechanisms in DeFi? Yeah, go ahead.
That's a really good question. So I actually met when I was still doing the coffee thing at this party in SF where I'm based, Joey Santoro, who's like the other Joey, founder of Faye, basically, which was like a huge, huge stablecoin from last cycle. And I was chatting with him and I was like, so what do you do? And he's like, oh, I'm building a stablecoin. I'm like, what's a stablecoin? And from that moment, I was like, the rabbit hole metaphor is so overused, but I didn't even know what a stablecoin was before that conversation. And then I started looking a little more into it. I was already kind of aware of Turing complete blockchains, Ethereum, NFTs, because through the coffee project, one of the companies I came into contact with was this company trying to use NFTs to expose producers of coffee beans, like growers in Honduras and stuff, to more price discovery directly, enabling them to like auction directly to buyers who run cafes or run like coffee roasters. Because the way it is now and the way it still is there's this really long supply chain where if you're growing coffee beans, you basically have one buyer and they set the price. There's no actual like price discovery. They're the ones who get to auction your product. So yeah, the very like 2021, 2022 like crypto project that I think now does not exist, but that exposure to it got me at least aware of like what Ethereum was and what an NFT was. So yeah, those two things combined got me started. And then when I started to look at the DeFi landscape, DEXs and stablecoins immediately jumped out as like, these are two really interesting design and engineering spaces, both of which were not solved at that point. I think that just between the two, I was like, a stablecoin feels more like a product to me. A DEX is more like a platform. I'm a product guy. I kind of started veering towards stablecoins because it's like there's an output, like the token that you get. Mm-hmm. I have a slightly more nuanced perspective on that now, having been 2 years plus deep. But at that point, it just seemed like, okay, you're making a product. And immediately, it's hard to describe, but like everything about hardware that I loved combined with the speed and sort of the distribution power of software just like came together for me. And I could not stop thinking about stablecoin design after that. So yeah, that's pretty much the beginnings of Dyad. Like, a month after that, I sold the Ozma patents to private equity and I just moved fully into DeFi.
And then you went all in on stablecoins.
Completely in.
Wow. And now we're at Dyad. So you're in. Now, what is Dyad? How does it work? How has it evolved since your first inception of the idea when you sold off your patents and now you're all in stablecoins? Like, how has it evolved from there to now? And what makes it different than other stablecoins?
For sure. So Dyad's gone through a lot of different versions of the design. Starting from when I first DM'd you to what we've deployed over the last few months, a lot of that has been kind of quickly getting past like what is the existing knowledge and understanding about stablecoins and absorbing that. And then realizing, okay, I'm kind of like on the edge of this. Like now nobody really knows the answer. It's time to figure out like what the right way to go is. Basically, Dyad builds from the CDP, which is collateralized debt position, which is the most battle-tested Lindy form of decentralized stablecoin. And that kind of pioneered by MakerDAO, I'd say like purified by Liquidy. And there's a lot of forks and versions of CDPs. The issue with the CDP that Dyad solves directly is this trade-off between over-collateralization and capital efficiency. And this issue, this trade-off, is why I believe CDPs have not seriously threatened the dominance of centralized stablecoins, because you have this inherent inefficiency in the system where if you want more stability, essentially, if you want more resilience against the volatility of the collateral, you have to just pay for that with capital efficiency. And I think Liquity is a really good case study there, where you see their V1, they're moving to V2 now to attempt to solve this issue directly. But their V1, they had like an average of like $4 of ETH for every one LUSD that was minted, which is like way, 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 way more collateral than you need to actually absorb the volatility of ETH. And that was kind of the central reason why they had trouble scaling beyond a certain point. So Dyad, just at a really high level, is designed to solve that issue, to allow the CDP to scale and to ultimately compete with centralized stables.
Okay. And so how does it work?
Yeah, great question. So Dyad introduces a second token that we call Kerosene. And Kerosene has a value as Dyad collateral. So this gets into like a really taboo territory with stablecoin design, because we all remember UST, Luna, and this is endogenous collateral, right? Endogenous collateral with the stablecoin is like super, like people have PTSD. It's just like normally a no-go. Yeah, exactly. But the reason UST got to the point it did is because of the capital efficiency of using Luna as backing, right? Using it as endogenous collateral. You can't scale a stablecoin, a CDP stablecoin that's backed with a volatile collateral that high unless there's some level of being able to sort of mint against an endogenous token. Now, the issue with UST is that they counted Luna's market price, like what it was trading at, as adding to UST's backing TVL, total value locked. They actually said, okay, Luna's trading at blah, blah, blah. That means that there's actually that much value decided by the market trading Luna backing UST. Kerosene and Dyad is very different, and this is the critical difference. Kerosene's value as backing collateral is deterministic. The protocol never looks at what its market value is. It has its own market value. It's trading right now at like 3x the deterministic value. But deterministic value just means our protocol runs an equation, which is used as Kerosene's oracle in terms of valuing it as Dyad collateral. And that's just TVL of all of the Dyad protocol, not including Kerosene. TVL minus Dyad supply, so minus the supply of stablecoins. So basically, what is the excess collateral, excess and exogenous collateral? So like ETH, wrap staked ETH, TBTC, we just added SUSDE, which is cool, or, you know, we got to talk tomorrow. We're adding some cool Dinero shit soon. But what is the value of all of that non-Dyad exogenous collateral minus the supply of the stablecoin divided by the current supply of the Kerosene token? And that basically makes Kerosene this tokenization of Dyad's over-collateralization. So I can go back into that. But basically, that issue that I called out at first, where CDP stablecoins have trouble scaling competing with centralized stablecoins because you have to trade off this over-collateralization for stability, basically, which kills the capital efficiency because you have way more than a dollar backing something that's worth a dollar. Kerosene tokenizes that excess and allows, if you're a holder of Kerosene, you deposit it in your note, we call it, that's the NFT that's like your position. Your position counts that deterministic value as additional backing for your Dyad. But overall, protocol-wide, Kerosene does not add anything to the TVL. The total TVL is all exogenous. So that means every Dyad is backed by exactly the right amount of exogenous collateral. And the minimum you can get to with our system is 125% backed. If every position is maximizing their use of Kerosene, that's the lowest it can go. But that's, you know, that's really efficient compared to like 1 to 4. And then Kerosene obviously is like the perfect incentive token for the USDC Dyad pool right now, which is up to like 5 million liquidity, because it's it's a farm token, but there's immediate utility that allows you to farm more efficiently. So that's, we can get into XP and notes in a second. That's where that goes. But it serves those two purposes. Yeah. It basically makes the use of backing collateral way more efficient, and it provides this sustainable yield, which right now it's like 90 APR on a stable pool on mainnet with like 5 million TVL chasing it. So it's hard to get to that with a typical like governance token or farm token.
Before we get into XP and notes, I wanted to hear, Kit, I would love to hear you say, like, Kit, this in your own words.
Yeah, so I usually do the magic thing where I just summarize everything that you have said. But before I do that, though, I definitely want to highlight one more bit is how does the minting process work? Do you have to still mint at 150% for the dyad, or are you able to do 100% of the exogenous and then inject, you know, whatever the deterministic price of kerosene is and to fill out the other 50%.
Exactly. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. So we have something with kerosene that we call the dollar rule, which is at any point you do need to have at least a dollar of non-kerosene collateral, no matter how much kerosene you have in your position, no matter what the deterministic value is at that time, you need at least a dollar of non-kerosene collateral backing it. If we didn't have that, the incentive would be to just max mint against kerosene until the protocol falls apart, basically. So that's a very important part of our mechanism. But you can keep adding more and more kerosene to a position where it's basically one-to-one exogenous collateral to dyad, and that makes you further and further from the liquidation threshold. So you could construct with a dollar of wrap staked ETH or a dollar of SUSDE for each dyad that you've minted, a position that the protocol sees as being like 300% collateralization ratio. So if the price of those exogenous collaterals and kerosene drop substantially, your position will be insulated from that. A metaphor I use for this is if you think of that over collateralization protocol wide that I said destroys capital efficiency with most CDPs as like a fluffy cloud, basically. Your amount of kerosene versus the total amount of kerosene is like your ability to pull that fluffy cloud, some portion of that fluffy cloud directly into your position and make that part of the fluffy cloud to insulate your position specifically from volatility. And it creates this nice competition for kerosene.
So, you know, Joe, you mentioned this great, you know, liquidation threshold. Like, let's walk through that bit, because what happens when your exogenous collateral drops below that dollar value? Right. Is it that you first sell off the kerosene to then pay down the dyad? So then it's again, one-to-one backed, or how does that mechanism work?
Yeah, this is a great question. So the dollar rules only apply when you're minting more dyad or you're withdrawing collateral. Okay. So yes, it is technically possible to have an under-collateralized exogenous wise position because the value of the exogenous collateral has dropped. Now, the protocol itself, dyad overall, can never be under-collateralized. There's that 125% minimum that it can hit even in these scenarios. Because think about if kerosene has this deterministic value, if let's just say ETH for ease of discussion, if ETH drops so much that you're under-collateralized with regards to your ETH, but your position is not liquidatable because you have so much kerosene, well, kerosene's deterministic value is highly correlated with ETH. So it's actually in practice difficult to get into that window, but that window does exist. If you're in that window, though, you cannot mint more dyad and you cannot withdraw collateral. But the overall system, dyad as a stablecoin, cannot become under-collateralized. Only individual positions that have a lot of kerosene, much more than others, can be under-collateralized technically because of that. But yeah, that's a really good question.
Okay, I see the nuance there. Now is there I guess an inflection point or a threshold where the number of uncollateralized individual positions starts jeopardizing the whole?
No, what would happen there is there would be a lot of liquidation opportunities, and we've had this before with like the couple of flash crashes over the last few weeks. We have a lot of users who kind of run competitive liquidation bots. And really what happens is there's just an opportunity to liquidate these positions. Liquidations generally go very quickly. The presence of kerosene in the system, because the deterministic value, again, is so correlated with the exogenous collateral backing or the exogenous collateral price, you can't really preserve an under-collateralized position very long in most scenarios, unless you have more kerosene than really any individual position has at this point, and probably would be difficult unless they just buy off of the market, difficult to construct. But even if you did construct that position, let's say you have half of all kerosene in one position and then mm-hmm. the rest is there, that just means every other position would have a lot less kerosene and would face that liquidation sooner. So you can't really, and this is critical, like the TVL in the system never counts the amount of kerosene or what kerosene's market or deterministic value is. And that's ultimately what keeps the system solvent, that system-wide 125% minimum.
Got it. But for that individual vault, though, the one that is under-collateralized, like the bots, the liquidation bots do come in and liquidate that position. And
absolutely,
could you just literally walk me through a step-by-step guide of how that liquidation works for this one individual under-collateralized vault?
For sure. So to liquidate a position where the dyad debt, basically, the amount of dyad that's been minted, is mm-hmm. greater in value than the exogenous collateral, but less lower value than both the exogenous and kerosene's value combined, it really is just our typical liquidation process where the liquidator pays the dyad debt, basically burns the dyad that's equal to the debt. They get the backing collateral at a 10% discount. And we count kerosene's deterministic value as its value for that liquidation. So what we've actually found is because kerosene is consistently traded at a premium market-wise to its deterministic value, that those are often the most competitive liquidations when there's a lot of kerosene to capture, because you're basically getting kerosene at a really substantial discount to market price. But even if it's trading below market price, which we haven't really seen because there's this very simple arb that opens up where if kerosene ever does trade market mm-hmm. price below deterministic value, you can buy it in mint free dyad basically. So that gets zipped up pretty quickly. Right. But if it does, the liquidation logic still stands because in order to liquidate, you have to direct the collateral to another NFT or a note. So that note would immediately be able to use the kerosene at that deterministic value.
Right. And so as the liquidator comes in, do they take out the steth or the wrap steth, or do they take out the kerosene to first sell to then burn down the dyad?
That's a good question. So yeah, so the burning precedes being able to capture any collateral. So we allow partial liquidations as mm-hmm. well, which, you know, has happened a number of times at this point. So you don't have to liquidate the entire position in one go if you have access to not the total amount of the debt.
That's really good.
It partially. And the logic mm-hmm. there is simply, we almost look at it like all of our vaults. So when I say deposit collateral, you're not actually putting collateral into an NFT, even though the UX kind of presents it that way because it mentally makes sense. That's mm-hmm. going into a 4626 vault where you have a share token for that vault attached to your NFT. And then the liquidation is basically the liquidator gets the share tokens in proportion to what they captured. So then the liquidator can withdraw, burn the share tokens to withdraw, or just add them to their NFT. But that's basically how it goes. The burning of the dyad always precedes being able to capture the collateral itself in the position.
Got it. And is kerosene also in one of these, you know, ERC-626 vaults?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I see. So then the person could burn the dyad and then they can choose, do I want to take more kerosene from this, you know, from your LP token, for lack of a better word, take your LP token of kerosene?
To be totally clear, the liquidator doesn't choose. So if they liquidate partially, they get the backing collateral in proportion to its blend in the liquidated NFT's backing. So if the NFT that's getting liquidated has like 20% kerosene, 80% wrap staked ETH, the liquidator would get 80-20, and they can't change that.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see.
I think this is a good part to go towards like what exactly notes are, which are the NFT, and then get into XP, because I think all this make up the dyad system.
And so, for sure.
So what exactly are notes?
Okay, so notes are 721 NFTs, and they are like your account, basically, in the dyad system. They store as metadata your dyad debt, your share tokens, basically, what share of each vault you own. And again, from the UX perspective, you're basically thinking you put your collateral into this NFT and you mint your dyad from the NFT. And in order to mint dyad, redeem dyad, and ultimately to farm kerosene, although you can farm it without this, it's just really inefficient, you need to have at least one of these notes.
Got it. And one thing when I was researching this is CDPs are siloed pools, but dyad is a shared pool. And because it's shared pool, that's why there's capital efficiency, and how everything is kept tracked is through the metadata, right?
Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, when I say metadata, I'm using that term loosely. Some of the metadata are ERC-20 tokens that are bound to the NFT. So that's really what XP is. And we can get into that in a second. It's not metadata in terms of using the ERC-721 metadata standard like you would for like DeFi Dave 21 is wearing a hat with katakana on it. Like, that's metadata, right? But like,
this is a Dodgers hat, actually.
What's that?
It's a Dodgers hat.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, it's cool.
I love that. No, I just got it the other day. I got like cherry blossoms right here too.
That's really hot. I love that. That's good. That's a good trait, man. You look rare right now. The way to think about when I say like metadata, I'm talking about any property that is attached to the note NFT, and you cannot like rip out of the note NFT. That attachment to the NFT is a major like primitive that we use throughout dyad. That's XP. That's like why there's a secondary market for the notes. That really creates the TVL stickiness ultimately without having locks like curve style or like solidly fork style. I'm very anti-lock.
How does that work? Like, why don't you need locks? Like, how does this system work?
Yeah. I mean, like, this is compared to, let's get right into the thick of it. Okay. So when I was talking about the way you earn kerosene, you provide liquidity to right now it's just the dyad USDC pool. Our main task right now is build up liquidity for dyad and USDC to make it just kind of fundamentally useful stablecoin with low slippage, blah, blah, blah. That could be different in the future, but that's what we're incentivizing right now with kerosene. So in order to do that, you don't have to have a note, but if you do have a note, your XP in your note basically boosts, it's like a 5x multiple right now for every XP that you have, boosts your efficiency for accruing that kerosene. So that essentially, you can get started and earn some kerosene and get like 10% without a note on a stable pair on mainnet, which is good. I mean, that's not bad yield, but it can be a lot higher if you have a note, and you have the more XP you have in your note, the higher it gets. Now let's get into what XP is. So XP is simply for every kerosene that you have deposited in your note, you earn 0.00001 XP per second per kerosene that you have deposited. So XP is just a measure of how much kerosene you've had deposited in your note and for how long. Now, if you withdraw kerosene from your note, that XP is slashed proportionally to your total amount of kerosene versus how much you withdrew. So this is where I'm talking about, it's not a lock. Mm-hmm. You're free to withdraw kerosene whenever. But if you do, you will slash a proportional amount of your XP, and it takes time to get that back. You basically need to rewind the clock and go back in time to undo that slashing, or just come in with a lot more kerosene so you earn XP faster. But this is a...
And what does XP do?
So XP boosts your accrual of kerosene, makes your farming more efficient when you're providing liquidity. So the more XP you have, the less size your LP needs to be to earn the same amount of kerosene as a bigger size LP position with less XP. It's just a boost on that. So what this does, it's interesting. So we recently, there was a pump on kerosene's price. We still don't know exactly why, but when that pump happened, very, very few note holders sold into it. And even if they wanted to, in order to sell into it, they would have had to rip their kerosene out of their notes, which would have destroyed this XP they've been accumulating. Some did, and others were able to rise up the XP leaderboard because now there's just less XP by doing nothing, by just holding their kerosene. So now they're sort of like the ones that are... What's that?
It makes a very interesting game theory dynamic.
Exactly.
Where you have the decision like, hey, do I want to, you know, stick around? Like when there's a pump, I keep gaining XP, or do I want to like sell my XP into the pump? But like,
exactly.
This isn't forced. That's why there isn't a lock or anything. So it isn't forced. Exactly. So people don't feel trapped.
Right. Okay. Right. You can withdraw at any time, but yeah, you're slashing that XP that you built up, and then you're going to start towards the bottom, or you're going to have to buy. So this is the other thing about notes. We have a secondary market for them. We just added it's on OpenSea. That's the back end, but we just added a sort of simple interface for it on the front end. It's going to have more features as we build. But when you sell your note, you can sell it with all of the collateral on XP intact. So there's really no reason to sell it with exogenous collateral in it. Cool. Most sellers withdraw before listing. But there's a strong incentive to sell with your kerosene intact, because that means you sell with your XP intact. If you withdraw your kerosene before selling, your XP is gone. Now your note's just worth a lot less.
That's cool.
Oh, so there's a market for the notes.
Yeah.
And some notes are worth more than others because they have maybe like all this kerosene and XP. And so you could have like one note that has maybe like a little bit of kerosene, not that much, but it was one of like the first one. It was one of the early ones, and it was able to like really gain a lot of XP. And so that note, I see. Okay.
Exactly.
I see where you're going with this.
And Joe, a quick question about the XP is that, does it continuously earn that 0.0001 XP per second, no matter what, even if you're not farming, if you're just simply holding kerosene?
Yes. That's the only requirement. So for each kerosene token you have in your note, it's earning that small amount per second. And then if you withdraw any amount of kerosene, it slashes that amount of XP proportionally. So that's really the only mechanism to run XP. You don't need to have any minted dyad. You don't even need to have any other collateral in it. We have some users who have these interesting note setups where there's nothing in it except kerosene, and they're not farming. All they're doing is basically improving, like we call it like ranching notes, like note ranching, right? They like have a note. They're just trying to build XP so they can flip it on secondary for a profit for less than it took to have the kerosene in there.
So like that's one strategy. Like you don't even have to like mint any dyad. You can literally get a note, get some kerosene, combine the two, and just wait. Just let it cook. Mm-hmm. Let it marinate.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But like think about they're earning value because they are really helping the protocol with that. By doing that, they're just keeping kerosene out of the Uniswap pool. So they're helping stabilize the price, which is valuable.
Yeah. That's a really interesting dynamic in helping a stablecoin protocol without actually minting the stablecoin. It's like a secondary thing that in turn helps like the minting of the stablecoin. I wouldn't call it secondary. I don't know what else to call it, but you know what I mean.
No, for sure. Yeah, no, for sure. I think that
this, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, please, Joey, finish your thought.
Yeah, so I want to caveat this. We are still in like the early days of price discovery on the secondary market. Like, what is XP worth? Like, what is that going to be? But it's interesting because it's a market that looks more like any like market with like limited price discovery, illiquid, unique things. Like, really, you know, NFT, but very much tied to the utility of this hardcore DeFi protocol. So the opportunities there for like trading these notes and building up XP, there's so much inefficiency there right now, but those inefficient markets attract a very specific kind of trader. And we're starting to see a inflow of folks like that, like people who did really well with like NFTs, which is a very different psychological profile than people who do really well with liquid tokens. So it's cool that we have both sides of that coming in and really like making Dyad grow from its, you know, very early stages to kind of what our goals are, which are long term but super ambitious.
Yeah, 100%. And I think your tokenomics also kind of speaks to that too, right? You guys have what, like 58 or 60% dedicated to like liquidity emission incentives. Yeah. Right. You guys are definitely in it for the long game too.
Yeah, it's 10 years of linear emissions of kerosene.
Wow. Okay. Definitely long game here. And then obviously the XP plays into that, right? Because the more XP you earn, the multiplier you get. Therefore, you need to have a large chunk in your tokenomics. And the question I had is right now with that 95% APR pool, which is super attractive, right? Literally on stables. And that is without any multiplier, right? Without any XP boost. It's just the baseline.
Oh, no. Let me be super clear here. So there's actually been some confusion around that. That's the average. So simple average where it's like, this is how much size is chasing that yield. This is the value of kerosene. Here's the emission rate. Just do that simple arithmetic and you get 95% APR. So that is the average. So if you come in with no note and no XP, you're probably going to be getting like 10%. The other part of that 95, I mean, we have users who are earning like 300% because they just have accumulated a lot of XP. So it's that range. I think at one point we had someone earning 800%. We're like, okay, we got to adjust something. But yeah, I want to be really clear, anyone listening, it's not 95% starting and then you earn more than 95 automatically. It's 95% is the average. And if you're starting out, you will earn less than that. But if you jump in either buying a note off of secondary that already has a lot of XP, or you really believe in this and you farm XP, you're basically farming XP from kerosene and deposit it right away to earn XP, or you just buy kerosene and deposit it, you will earn more towards that 95% and then beyond.
Got it. Like, do you have a rough number on how much it is? Like, if I were to bought a note day one right now and, you know, I have no kerosene, but I have, you know, a deposited minted Dyad and then, you know, farmed it in this pool, what would that APR be?
Like if you're just starting out with no XP?
Just starting out, no XP.
Yeah.
And I'm planning on putting every single kerosene into XP.
And then you start going right away. It would start, like I said, around 10%. And then because the other thing about kerosene is it is technically an ERC-20 token with no cap, right? Mm-hmm. It's just earned perpetually. So the way that it's burned, the supply sink is people withdrawing their kerosene to do whoever knows what. So depending on that, how much is being created versus how much is being burned from people withdrawing, that's going to really affect it. But I would say a good starting point to keep in mind is around 10%. And this also highly depends on what kerosene is trading at market-wise at the time, market price. So that, again, is a variable. But yeah, I'd say we can think of the scale from like 10 at the beginning to about 300 once you get to be one of the top 10 to 20 NFTs right now.
And so the kerosene flywheel, let's sum this up in the kerosene flywheel. It's basically, I mint a note, I get some kerosene, I use that. I mint a note. I mint some Dyad. Hey, I want more capital efficiency on my Dyad. I add some kerosene, and boom, I get that capital efficiency. I'm earning XP, which puts a boost on the amount of kerosene that is emitted to me in inflation. Did I get that?
Yeah. The one step is XP doesn't automatically give you kerosene. Kerosene automatically gives you XP. XP boosts the kerosene you get from providing liquidity. So you do, to earn the kerosene and activate your XP, basically, you do need to provide liquidity there. But to earn the XP, all you have to do is have kerosene in your note. So the people who are just farming XP with the intention of probably flipping their note on secondary because of the XP that it has in it, they're not earning more kerosene. They're just, they have kerosene, they either bought it or had the airdrop, or they have other notes that are designated kerosene earning notes. And then they just put that kerosene into the XP notes and they earn XP, but they're not earning more kerosene with those notes. kerosene, the only way you earn it is farming, you know, providing liquidity to that stable pool. But the more XP you have, or the more portion of the total XP you have, the more kerosene you will earn for your farming activities. That's the way to think about
Understood.
It. So okay. XP is like a boost and to your farming.
And I want to go, okay, got it. So I want to go over the distribution of the token. You said you had an airdrop. I think it was like 58% in token incentives, and then it was like 10% to the team, 10% to investors, 10% somewhere else. I'm curious, like, who were your investors, early backers, and what was the airdrop distribution looking like? And is that airdrop still available?
Yeah, great question. So right now, the airdrop was to holders of notes, obviously. They each got 25K kerosene. And then to four NFT communities who seemed like, you know, they were interested in DIAD. Their members had a strong overlap with people who were, yeah, just open to and seek out new and kind of progressive DeFi primitives like this. So it was Miladies, obviously, Biwasi, which is an interesting community, Wen Llama, kind of like a Curve ecosystem. And Wasi. Honeycomb.
We got the Wasi. Yeah,
there you go. Nice. Awesome. And then Honeycomb, which is like one of those Barrachain adjacent, or not adjacent, but Barrachain doesn't exist yet. So Barrachain themed, let's say. What is it like? Sort of like a harbinger of Barrachain launch NFT community. So yeah. That was great. We there's like 1,000 holders of kerosene right now, give or take. So pretty okay. The other part of the supply, so yeah, let's just say like 60% for that 10-year emission, which is just linear. Team 10%, and then investors 10%. We've actually only gotten like 5% into that. So we still have that percentage, basically, if we need to bring on new investors. If we don't, which is looking like right now we do not need to, that would then basically go towards treasury is what we would call it, which is like flexible stuff that we could do. In terms of backing, so we only raised about like 800K total. So we've run like really lean this whole time. And part of that obviously is like my own situation from other stuff, which is what it is. And it's kind of a luxury, but I also like to make this work. Kerosene couldn't really have this giant like VC level overhang that would start to not like break, but it would just make the tokenomics and make the flywheel a little bit less compelling when we really needed it to be compelling. And so our largest investor is Rogue Capital, which is a little bit under the radar, but I'd say one of the best crypto specific VCs right now. And they're very focused on DeFi. And then the others were all like very highly aligned angels. There's a tweet with all of them called out, which I will send to you. I think if I rattle it off the top of my head, it'll absolutely leave someone out. So I'm not going to do that, but I'll send it to you so you can.
Like an award speech. Thank you. This person, that person, that person.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I definitely don't want to do that, but they've all been really good and like handpicked mainly through like introductions from different people. And I think that's partially like that foundation of like how we raised and who we raised from and how much we raised is definitely paying off now, and I think will pay off even more in the future.
Yeah, less is more, everyone. Less is more. You don't need to raise the biggest round. In fact, you just need to raise as much as you need to raise.
I obviously generally agree. I think it depends on what you're doing. I think like more consumer focused stuff or like other things can like have more upfront costs if you let them. But yeah, for this, it was like, we need to build the base layer. If the base layer is working, it will basically support the next layer. If that layer is working, it'll support the next layer. So definitely not like bootstrapping, but every layer sort of needs to validate itself. And that's what the process we're in right now.
Yeah. One thing I can tell, you've been very thoughtful and intentional throughout this entire process, whether it was with the mechanism design, the kerosene flywheel, how distribution is. And now I want to go into your go-to-market. You mentioned before, right now, Dyad, it's a farming stable. That's how all stables start out as. But I'm curious, like, what are your plans to grow the circulation of Dyad? Like, how do you reach, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars?
Totally. I'm going to use one word. And again, it's like, it's a taboo at this point, but I feel like there's a lot to be learned from the Terra ecosystem before it crashed. And that is Anchor. So Anchor is, I think, like one of the best top of funnels for any stablecoin we've ever seen. Unfortunately, lower down in that funnel was stuff that didn't work and harmed a lot of people. So I'm not making light of that at all. But basically, we are building Anchor, but there's really good stuff underneath, which is the Dyad base layer that's operating right now.
Oh. So
our vision is basically anybody who would never listen to anything I just said or have the patience to talk about notes or XP or any of this shit will be able to swap their USDC or Tether for Dyad and plunk it in a vault and earn yield. And we're very, very close to that right now. So that is, when you talk about distribution, it's basically that. It's single-sided staking of a stablecoin with transparent yield that is variable, but is just based on really what like borrow demand is. And so to support this, we have a kind of the way that Dyad is like a unique take on the CDP. We have a very unique take on like the Aave style margin lending that again, solves some of those issues. Definitely not an Aave fork, building on sort of what Aave got right, what some other lending protocols are attempting right now. But that will be the basis for this anchor of Dyad basically. And that's our vision for expanding demand for non-farming demand for the Dyad stablecoin and getting it to a point where then you can start talking about like somebody buying a coffee with Dyad, right? Until you're there, until you have a simple, basically savings account type way that appeals to a wide range of people who, again, aren't DeFi native people, would not care about anything I've said on this podcast. Until you're there, you can't really talk about like using a stablecoin to buy a coffee. I think that's like the last stage of like real dominance. And USDC is like just starting to scratch the surface on that right now. I'm watching it closely. But yeah, next stage in terms of getting Dyad distributed and expanding circulation, I just look to Anchor.
And so hypothetically, what would a Dyad Anchor look like?
I mean, on the surface from like that user, it would look a lot like Anchor, right? It would just be you acquire this stablecoin probably through this liquidity pool that we're incentivizing right now. We can have a very simple like web app or even an app that is basically you can fund it with, if you want to do a direct, you know, trade on chain, or you can fund it using like Apple Pay or Venmo or whatever it is you're using. It shows you what your interest rate is, what your APR is. That varies based on what's actually happening below the surface on the layer that we've built now, plus that lending layer that I mentioned. And then we can have a, you know, XP-like mechanism at a certain point where the longer you keep your funds in here, the more percentage of that yield you basically earn. And if you would remove, then that like consumer XP, whatever it is, it's not going to be an NFT at that point. It'll be just a consumer mechanism. Get slashed, but you're able to withdraw at any point. There's no lockup. There's nothing like that. It's just there's this gamified mechanic to encourage you to stay in because you'll just earn more of the yield over time. So that's basically from a user standpoint what it is. Possibly we do other stuff at some point. I mean, I think that at that stage we'd be working with like a consumer fintech that actually does like has the licensing and does the compliance work needed to actually do like consumer lending and things like that. I know EtherFi right now is working on a cash product, which is like a kind of better version of your typical like crypto prepaid debit card. And then there's a lot of interesting opportunity with like actual credit card like mechanisms that aren't actually pulling a credit score and working the way a normal credit card does. Like kerosene mechanism is essentially a credit mechanism at the end of the day. And if you make that an incentive for certain things, it basically allows you to put more on your card. And there's a lot to be done there. But yeah, the next stage, okay, the anchor basically is just very simple. Get your Dyad, put it in this account. You see your balance. You can withdraw it at any time. And you're earning your XP, we'll just call it that for now, for how long you keep it in there. And that entitles you to more of the yield. Now, what's happening under the surface, like I said, it is this lending protocol that we're super excited about. This has been, like, since we've launched, where most of our time and energy from the dev side, from the quant side, and now from the auditor side is going. So, yeah, what Dyad is starting to do with CDP stablecoins, I think that this will do with over-collateralized or collateralized lending, but possibly larger, I think larger, because it's a larger addressable market.
Got it. I love how it's called. It's first you had Dai, but now you have Dyad. It's like it's an evolution. You add on to it.
So people ask about the name. It, yeah, there is definitely a similarity with Dai. Believe it or not, that was unintentional, because the name Dyad actually refers to the stability of the stablecoin and the volatility of kerosene, and that was sort of this Dyad that comes together to create a coherent and functional whole. But yeah, when anyone who sees it now, it's like, oh, it's like a dig or some kind of a reference to the granddaddy. No,
I know. Yeah, when I was reading it, I didn't think of it. It's only when I've been saying it out loud, Dyad, Dyad, Dyad. Yeah. I'm like, oh, wow, the addition.
Exactly. It's the evolution. Exactly. Yeah, I'm not mad at it. I mean, it's definitely working for us.
It's great. It's great memetics for you. Wait, were you gonna say something?
No, I just wanted to compliment Joey on how, like, a sobering approach you're taking through, like, product adoption, and like it kind of speaks to, like, your background of, like, coming from the hardware, like, the literally it's in the name, it's hard, you know, for you to bring it to market and to do it so soberly. I really appreciate that.
Also, a lot consumer of these hardware, so it has to be like,
yeah, even more tested. And then, you know, then for it to come into my living room is gone through, like, the gauntlet before it even gets there. Yeah. So, like, yeah. I love his approach here, because most other stablecoin projects are like, hey, launch stablecoin step one, step two, buy banana, right? And that's literally how all of them kind of wants to get there. And that's definitely not how it works. So I really want to compliment Joey on, like, his very sober approach to getting it in the hands of everybody.
I don't mean to add on to the glazing, but I really appreciate your linguistics of, like, very simple linguistics for me to, like, understand everything. Like, okay, there's XP, there's kerosene. It's not like some extended, like, you know, CRV, CVX, stake, like 125. Like, I feel like those things are, like, I get it, but, like, they aren't the most easy to understand if you keep extending out things. And I obviously it's like a different product and a different system, but, like, everything here is just straightforward to understand. You have Dyad notes. Ooh, the notes are like you, the account. I've talked about this on a few podcasts before, like, how important it is, like, linguistics is, and that's, like, very looked over by devs that are just trying to be technical and just, like, try to, like, just ship something out, and, like, they have, it's like, and then they don't realize when users are trying to use something, it's not just like part of the user experience is, like, what you're reading and how you're trying to understand it. And when you have, like, really long acronyms or, like, really confusing terminology, I don't know. Like, I think I'm, like, one stablecoin that I was guilty of this was, what was that one? Bean. Like, Bean was, like, a cool experiment, but, man, was that fucking confusing. That was confused. That was all over the place. But, like, this was, like, this is, like, pretty straightforward. So, like, kudos on that. The only thing is, like, the metadata. The only thing is, if I had to do one criticism, is, like, the metadata. I was confused with that because I know, like, NFT metadata is something else. I would just recommend doing, like, a different term for metadata, even though it's technically metadata. It's just, like, oh, the first thing I thought of, like, was NFT metadata. So, but kudos That's on the linguistics overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe calling it, like, stats or something, because that's ultimately.
Yeah. Metadata. Just stats. But, yeah.
I appreciate that, guys. That means a lot, and it's been a long road to get it to that point. There were versions of Dyad that I've explained to people where it was like Beanstalk level and beyond. So yeah, I'm glad to hear that feedback. Yeah. And I'm glad you guys feel that way for sure.
No. And we love all stable coins, you know, we love Beanstalk. We love that. We love all stable coins, but yeah, it's, we're still early, as you know, in the development of just stable coins and DeFi. And so just like trying to figure things out and figure, and like, it's so hard to discover new things and figure out new mechanisms. And, you know, Dyad's definitely doing that and leading the way there. And I'm curious, you know, in like the stablecoin landscape, we always hear about like the stablecoin trilemma of like decentralization, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that framework's like even relevant anymore? If not, is there like a better alternative framework to view stablecoins from?
Yeah. So the trilemma, I mean, Dyad's designed to break that directly, right? That's really what like Kerosene does, because the trilemma version, there's a couple trilemmas. The trilemma that I'm familiar with is decentralization, capital efficiency, and stability. Those are like pick two of the three type of thing. Dyad is designed to break that specifically, to have all three of those. Where I think stablecoins compete, and ultimately what the task of a stablecoin is like just the stablecoin, is minimize both the cost of external liquidity for the purpose of redeemability and the cost of internal backing collateral for the purpose of liquidations. And that's really it. Like a token that can do both of those things and continue to jam down those costs, that's ultimately what the game is right now. Because when you jam down those costs, you get cheap liquidity, it will stay pegged. When you jam down the drag that over collateralization has as backing collateral, you will be able to survive all types of different markets because you can ensure incentive to liquidate. So it's really, that's the game. It's design a mechanism where both of those costs are constantly being jammed down. And I think that's it. That's it right now.
Got it. And what are your thoughts on the current stablecoin landscape? I mean, I know there's like Liquidity V2 that came out. There's like other like reserves doing some things. Like I'm curious, like what are your thoughts on like what stablecoins like look like right now?
So I think there's two broad categories right now. There's like stablecoins where the purpose is like its long-term purpose is to bear yield. And then there are stablecoins that are sort of more in the traditional goal of like buying a banana, as you said. So there's this old, like really old theory in finance, which I think is largely true, which is that bad money chases out the good. So what that refers to is like way back in the day when coins would have like different percentages of precious metals, and the ruler or the duke or whoever was like, okay, every coin, whether it has 2% silver or 50% silver, you need to trade it. It's worth the same thing, right? This is sort of like the origin of like the fiat currency concept. So what would happen in that scenario is people who had coins with more silver would just hoard them. They wouldn't spend them. If you could give the baker or like the armor maker a coin that had 2% silver, and they'd have to treat it as the same value as a coin that had 50% silver, well, you're keeping the 50% silver coin, you're giving them the shitty one. So that means that the money supply degrades over time. It just starts to be, the circulating coins start to be the bad ones, the ones with less precious metal and more crap in them. So that's similar to, I think, how the stablecoins that inherently bear yield versus those that don't bear yield are sort of playing out. Like, you can grow the TVL of a yield-bearing stablecoin really effectively, but nobody's ever going to want to like buy something or transact with something that bears yield, because as soon as you bought your thing that doesn't bear yield with it, you're down, you're out. And I think that is like the limitation of some of the really yield-focused stablecoins and newer ones that we're seeing now. And I think they have a place as products in their own right, right? Like, we just onboarded SUSDE. I think Athena is awesome as like a carry trade that's tokenized into easy to use one USD units. But that's counted in the stablecoin conversation. I wouldn't really say it's a stablecoin in that their goals are different and the product is different. And then you kind of on the other side of that, you have stuff, like Liquidy V2. I put Dyad in the category of like a stablecoin with ambitions to become money, all of those things. And yield has to be part of their growth story and the reason people start to use it. But the stablecoin itself is ultimately designed to be a medium of exchange. And the metric they're going to start to look at more and more heavily is velocity of the stablecoin. Like once this, you know, anchor of Dyad has good penetration, is good user base, we have excellent liquidity, that stage, the next stage is going to be just focusing maniacally on velocity. Because velocity ultimately is a measure of how useful is this thing as money. That's basically how I see the space right now. I think it's just going to keep bifurcating. I think that the other side of that is there's a lot more comfort. The market is more comfortable with centralization on the yield-bearing stablecoin side. And I think because whether they know it or not, the market understands this is not really money. This is like a trade that is tokenized in a convenient way. It's great. I want to participate. I have bags in those stablecoins, definitely. But it's doing a different thing. So I think that's the split right now.
Got it. Okay. I think this is a good place to actually, one more question. And Kit, this is the one you always ask. You know what it is.
So Joey, in your own words, what does success look like for Dyad?
What does success look like? I'd have to say somebody buys a banana at their local market using Dyad stablecoins. Let's say that.
Wow.
Banana emojis in the comments.
Exactly. That banana purchase, and I like it. I'm going to use it now instead of purchasing a coffee. But that banana purchase that's the end game, right? That's the last thing. Because before that, Dyad is being used to settle the wholesale order of like 10,000 or kilograms of bananas from the banana farm across the ocean and coming in. Like that's happening years before a consumer is actually using Dyad to buy a banana. So excuse me, if we get to the stage, and we will get to the stage, where somebody's ultimately using Dyad as the medium to buy that banana, that is success. That is absolute success.
Lovely. Yeah. Lovely. Thanks for reusing my example back at me.
Yeah, it's great. I'm going to use it again and again.
No, we love the bananas. But Joey, before we end every interview, we like to ask one question, like one fun question or lightning round.
Every question was fun. What are you talking about, DeFi Dave?
a non-crypto question. Actually, I want to do like two. I'm curious if you weren't in crypto and if you weren't in hardware, what would you be doing as your profession?
It's a really good one. I don't know. That's like all I really think about. Maybe I'd be like, I probably could have had like a pretty good music career, maybe a musician. That could have been fun.
Standard.
But yeah, okay. I mean, I haven't made music in a really long time other than just like freestyling when I'm taking a shower or something. I need to stop thinking about this. So yeah, probably down there in terms of like what was likely, but yeah. Nobody's ever asked me that before.
Got it.
So yeah, if it weren't that, it'd be that.
Yeah. And if I guess last one, who'd you recommend as a guest? Who'd you want to have on as Flywheel? On Flywheel.
Oh, next guest. That's a really good question. There are a bunch I could think of. I would get on the Yes Crew. You know that project on Blast?
We had them.
Oh, you had them already? I didn't see the episode.
It's okay.
They're an interesting bunch. I mean, it's basically the only team, right? Like with a couple of like substitutions, but yeah, that's interesting. All right. So you already had them on. You know, it could be interesting to have the Bean guys because they're really, really going through it right now. They're in a very, but they're, I'd say they're one of the most ambitious stablecoin projects I've ever seen. I haven't put any of my money in Bean because they were a page of their white paper. They're like one equation, and it was like the whole page.
Yeah.
And that's a lot for me, but I respect that they're really, really, really pushing the boundaries. So they could be interesting to have on. Ben Weintraub and some other ones. But yeah, it's like two main dudes right now who are doing it. So they could be super interesting. Yeah. Have you had Doug from Ambien on yet?
We did have Doug on.
Oh, God, you guys really...
Yep, very early. Very
that's
early.
Good. That's really good. Yeah. I'm just kind of listening.
Doug and you.
Yeah. I just remembered, I think Slater from Blueberry recommended you as a guest.
Slater's a great guy. Yeah, Slater. Okay, so that's one of the Diet Angels. Slater's an awesome dude. Yeah. Shout out Slater. Early started giving me feedback on early design ideas. We're planning some collaboration stuff once they launch their latest. So yeah, look out for Dyad,
nice.
Blueberry collab. He's really good, man. And there's so many. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, have you had AZ Flynn on? Have you had AZ Flynn on? AZ Flynn. I don't know what his real name is. Okay, he's the dude. Do you remember like a couple months ago? Hayden fired this dev from Uniswap because he like launched some shitcoin.
And yeah, it was like, yeah, I do. Like,
okay, that guy, he's really funny and actually really smart. I will connect you with him. He's hilarious. I don't know if he'd come on. I mean, I'm sure he'd come on.
It's I'm
like,
down.
Yeah, he would do it. He would do it. I mean, he might be coming on like with a VTuber or whatever it is, but yeah, you should absolutely
talk totally
about
cool.
That. Okay.
I like that. Okay. And where can people find you and learn more about Dyad?
Yeah, so they can find me, Joey Roth, on X, Dyad, 0x Dyad on X. And on there's links to the Discord. If you want to message me, my DMs are open on X. Do not message me on Discord. I get a lot of weird shit, and I can't really check it. But yeah, anyone who has questions after listening to what we had to say on this episode, I'm always, always interested in engaging in people who are interested in this stuff. And actually a lot of our design ideas have come from community members, some of whom are like very, very smart individuals who found stuff and versions of it and brought it to our attention. And that really led to what we eventually deploy.
Yeah. Well, Joey, thank you so much for joining us. We hope to see you again soon.
Hey, DeFi Dave, Capital K, this is really a pleasure. This is one of the most fun podcasts I've done. So, yeah, thank you for having me. And again, any other questions that anybody has, do not hesitate to hit me up. I really do like having these conversations.
Yeah. Thank you so much. See you.
Awesome, Joey.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome to the Post Game Show. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, here with Capital K. And we are wrapping up our episode with Joey Roth from Dyad. Dyad, I'm excited for this episode because it's like, I love seeing what's like, before things like get big or before things like, what's cooking. I like to see what's cooking. I like to see what's coming up. Like, yeah, you have your established majors, you have your established DeFi projects, but like, who is that like, you know, that like prospect that like no one's really looking at yet, but it's like, oh wait, there's like something there. And I feel like Dyad has potential in that regard. Like Joey and his team have been iterating on Dyad for a while. And like, you can tell he like just really cares. And he's like really into stablecoins, to like the fact that he like sold his like traditional business to like do this shit. So Kit, what are your thoughts on this one?
Honestly, what made me the most impressed is the product structure. And how it's not just a regular, you know, EOA, you know, a regular wallet, and you can just ape into the stable coin, but you actually have to buy like a pass in order to use it. But all of your positions live inside this NFT pass. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's such a clever structure and clever buy-in and fee structure, because the only fee comes from minting the pass. So I thought that was an innovation that I haven't seen. And obviously the stablecoin mechanic itself is also quite innovative in the way you think of it. I'm still slightly a bit skeptical of it at scale and seeing how it kind of works. you know, yeah, through super, super turbulent times, especially with, you know, kerosene not really used as collateral, but also kind of as collateral. So it was a bit, you know, iffy for me there. But largely the way the product is packaged, I think is very interesting.
Novel DeFi innovation happening here. And that's what we love to see on Flywheel. And if you want to see more of that, you know what to do. Hit that bell button, subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. Give us a like. Make sure you go to our socials, follow us on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22.
You can follow me at 0xCapital_K.
And we'll see you next week. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.